Today on Rainbow Country, the Inspire Awards, awards honoring the LGBT community. My Big Brother Canada Season 7 coverage comes to a triumphant finale. Plus, the University of the West Indies Toronto Benefit Gala. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Here on Rainbow Country, we may use language not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. No matter who you are.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory.
No matter what you do.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam.
We all have a story to tell. And it starts right here on this gay radio show, helping to give voice to the LGBT community. Together, we'll lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this ever-expanding journey through Rainbow Country. Welcome to Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. Get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So get Rainbow Country for free wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, including the archives, the full 2-hour archives, marktara.com. So, Real Heart Film Festival is having a live script reading on July 5th. So here's what they're looking for. They're looking for their lead. They're looking for a transgender actress to play the lead role of Kin. So I've posted the link. It's on my Twitter feed, at Mark Tara Music. And you'll find out more information at that link. Again, they're looking for a transgender actress to play the lead role of Kin. I've posted the link on my Twitter feed, at Mark Tara Music, and this is happening on July 5th for Real Heart Film Festival. A huge thank you to everyone who donated to CIUT's Spring Membership Drive. We met our goal of $100,000. Actually, we went over. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you donated, a huge thank you. If you haven't donated but would still like to, head over to CIUT.fm and hit the donate button. It's secure. It's safe. Have your voice counted. So this is episode 151. Today, I chat with Antoine Al-Hashem, who started the Inspire Awards to honor members of the LGBT community, especially the members of Toronto's LGBT community. My Big Brother Canada coverage comes to an end with the final three of season 7. Third place finisher, Kira, runner-up, Anthony, and of course, the winner of Big Brother Canada season 7, that would be Dane Rupert. Plus, I chat with the honorees of the University of the West Indies Toronto Benefit Gala 2019. Those include Deborah Cox and Damian Marley, son of Bob Marley. So my friends, this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with the Inspire Awards.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
He is the founder and president of Inspire Awards. He is Antoine El Hashem.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you?
I'm good. First of all, we are on the set of your Rogers TV show, On the Couch. Uh-huh. I happen to work on it. Just FYI, people.
Another thing that I'm involved in that you are part of.
Yeah.
You're always very supportive and part of a lot of things that I do. So.
And you just celebrated the fifth anniversary. This is the fifth season of it.
Of our magazine, The Buzz. Again, that's for my daytime job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as well as On the Couch.
And On the Couch was fifth anniversary. Yes, correct.
May 24th marks the 9th annual Inspire Awards.
Yay!
Yay. Okay, so first of all, what are these awards all about?
All right. As we've said on a number of appearances interviewed over the last 9 years. It started with a simple idea. Our community has a lot of awesome people doing awesome work, businesses and organizations, and we don't have a body that celebrates them and reminds them that their good work is acknowledged and appreciated and have been seen. And so we set out to create an annual event, and it's an evening, if you have not experienced it. And a lot of people actually by this point have attended the awards at some point. But if you haven't, it's an evening of community and performances and celebrations and a really fantastic stage ceremony. You've been there. It's a lot of community moments, a lot of people who are being honored reminding us of the work that they've done and why we're here in that venue. And it's a very heartwarming night and very inspiring night. And it ends up with a dance party in the garden at Hart House. Mm-hmm. We love that space, honestly.
It's
and
a great
I have to say,
space.
Thank you, University of Toronto. You've been extremely, extremely supportive of the event.
Oh, that's great.
And not for real. If you have an event and you want to get Hart House, they are the nicest group of people I've ever worked with. They are very, very accommodating, very nice.
So the 9th annual, what can people expect from the 9th annual Inspire Awards?
So we do have a really cool program this year. Mm-hmm. We have somebody, I can't actually remember the name of the equipment, but it's like the harp.
Okay.
That's what I keep being described. Mm-hmm. So that's how you're going to enter the garden to that kind of music.
Nice.
And we're going to have a little cocktail reception in the garden, and then get into the great hall for the seated down ceremony. We have some fantastic nominees and honorees like every year. Our lifetime recipients this year, lifetime achievement recipients, are Leslie Lee Cam, Jim Perot, and Jackie Shane, who was a very iconic, you know who Jackie is?
Yeah,
of course.
Started in Toronto in the 60s.
So I don't know if you're aware, Jackie passed away recently. So we decided that we're going to give her an honorary lifetime, so we remember her work. And she was a lot of the underground clubs and young street clubs and all that in the 60s, 70s.
And was nominated for a Grammy
this year. She was nominated for a Grammy, yes. So
why did you start these awards in the first place?
Well, because there wasn't nobody doing that.
But was there a seminal moment? Was there a flashpoint for you this was needed?
Okay, a little bit of the story. Yeah, I guess what I said, the idea is I was at a summit and somebody said awards and a light bulb just went on and I went, we don't have anything like that in Toronto. Why? We really, and I've been in media and in the community for, at that point, 22 years or something. Mm-hmm. Now I'm 31 years in media. But I thought we need to do that. So I started calling people in the community saying, hey, listen, I've got this idea. It's what I think we should all come together and do it. We have... The Inspire Awards is presented by different community organizations mm-hmm. and involves a lot of volunteers and different people. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, yeah, why didn't we think of this? That's a great idea. Call us on Monday. So I spent the whole weekend writing this treatment of what the awards may look like. How does the jury work? How does the voting work? How do we promote it? And presented it to a group of community on Monday, and everybody's like, yeah. So we had a really fantastic event. Mm-hmm. First year, we held it at Casa Loma, first couple of years. The first year, we lit the castle in purple. Mm. We actually had our team. And right away, it actually clicked with people. There was a lot of press releases and news. And people were driving from the suburbs to see the purple castle that night. Mm. We actually had a traffic jam outside of Casa Loma. And we had a sold-out event.
Wow.
And the one pivotal moment, that's actually a very good question, that is the reason why we're here 9 years later, mm-hmm. is one of the first nominees that we received a nomination, because the nominations are open to the public mm-hmm. or to the community. We received a nomination for this teacher that lives in Toronto with her partner but drives every day to Bowmanville or Durham just to teach there because she feels that she does a more impactful work mm-hmm. To the small community in the suburbs. And when we called her, I was doing a lot of the calls back then. Now we have a much bigger team. But when I called her and she started screaming on the phone, like, oh my God, I've never imagined anybody would see me, would notice me. And that was just, so people, especially the unsung heroes in our community, that's what we're doing the work mm-hmm. for. At the event itself, she came up on stage and Deb Pierce, who mm-hmm. has hosted the Inspire Awards many times and familiar to the community, was my co-host that night. And we were hugging her. And when I hugged her, she was like literally shaking in my mm-hmm. arms from kind of sobbing, kind of mm-hmm. excitement, whatever. And that moment is I knew that this is the feeling that we want to do for our community. We want to make them feel mm-hmm. Celebrated and remembered.
To recognize people, to know that they're seen and they're validated. What they're doing is validated. That's powerful.
Yeah, and I think that's actually the simple of it. It's not about the awards or the pageantry or the show thing on stage. Mm-hmm. Is we go on with our lives daily and we forget to thank people mm-hmm. and. Our community, the same as the mainstream and the broader community, mm-hmm. Missing that is missing. We have a lot of great people doing great work, and mm-hmm. we miss the opportunity to say thank you. Another big thing, before I forget about the awards this year, is there's two special things. First, every year for the last few years, we chose a theme mm-hmm. to spotlight. And this year, with all what's been happening over the last couple of years with the Me Too movement and a lot of the misogyny that we saw through the presidential race and what have you, we decided that even within our own community, sometimes we forget the women's role in our community. Mm-hmm. So for anybody who is a woman or identify as women, this year we are honoring women in our community. Mm-hmm. The theme of the year is Inspiring Women, Inspire Love. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a fantastic presentation with a number of representation from our community telling us on stage their story of being a woman in the community. Mm-hmm. And then we're finishing the evening with a big performance of four women artists and one male artist. Mm-hmm. And four women dancers and one male dancer all came together to create an iconic medley kind of number for the awards. That's all I'm going to say, because you're going to have to come and see it if you want to see it.
So speaking of coming and seeing it, how can people get tickets? It's open to the public.
It's open to everybody, yes. We have families, we have friends, we mm-hmm. have allies, we have community. Also, one of the things that has been observed at our events is it's be who you are. Dress in leather, dress in drag, dress in your fabulous wear, dress in shorts and t-shirt, as long as you look you feel fabulous,
yeah,
because it starts inside, then it's open to everybody. And it's a really magical night. From the beginning, the way we plan the evening is we want you to leave the venue thinking next day when you wake up in the morning, our community is awesome, and how can I continue to be part of it, and how can I contribute to this community? Mm-hmm. So you can get your tickets on inspireawards.ca. That is inspireawards.ca. And the poster is on the homepage. You can just follow the link. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $40. It's probably one of the most affordable events for what you get. Mm-hmm. You get a cocktail reception with some hors d'oeuvres. You get the fantastic ceremony on stage. Mm-hmm. You got performances from the community throughout the night. Mm-hmm. You get the dance party, and you get a savory and sweet buffet in the garden. So it's a full evening, from 6:30 doors open for the public till 11:30.
Okay.
And at Heart House on May 24th. And we hope to see everybody
2019,
there.
2019, yeah.
And yeah, this is the 9th annual, and can't believe it. Very soon we'll be celebrating
2020.
Ten years. Actually, you know what? I didn't realize it's an even number year, and it's the 10th anniversary. So
special.
Yeah, 10-20.
10-20. Antoine Al-Hashem, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Hi there, I'm Glenn Dixon, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
And welcome back, everyone. The 9th Annual Inspire Awards are happening Friday, May 24th at Heart House here in downtown Toronto. For more information and for tickets, go to inspireawards.ca. So over the last few weeks, I've been covering Big Brother Canada and have been doing so for the last few seasons. I have to say, Big Brother Canada is uniquely our own Canadian version of a show that's been going on and running successfully since, believe it or not, 1999. Big Brother Canada always has LGBT representation, and Kira from season 7 happens to be gender non-binary. They finished third. So we're going to hear from Kira, plus we'll hear from runner-up Anthony, as well as the winner of Big Brother Canada Season 7, Dane Rupert. All this and more, up next.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Mission to find the ultimate agent is almost complete.
It's a dangerous game.
3 agents remain, but only one will pass the final test. Let's get started. Do you promise to tell the truth?
Yes.
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 Kira, do you think crying makes you a weak player?
No, I think other people think crying makes me weak, but I use that to my advantage.
Did you do enough to win?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yes, I've already told you.
Dean, does a pretty boy deserve to win?
Play with
Others burned out, but I was on fire this whole season. Yes!
Anthony, do you have any regrets?
Not one. I am the puppet master. I controlled every single vote, whether I was HOH or not.
Did you lie in this game? The real question is, which of you is the most worthy? It's a dangerous game.
Dane, you must now choose to evict either Anthony or Kira. Whoever you decide to keep in the house is the person you'll be up against in the final vote. Please tell us who you're evicting and why.
All right, guys, this is a very hard decision. I love you guys both so much. I think this was a very deserving top three. This was my dream for 20 years to be in this spot, and I control my own fate, and I earned this power. 67 days ago, I also had a dream, and I also had a vision. And tonight, I get to turn my dream and my vision into reality. Everybody knew about the Pretty Boys, but nobody knew about the Doug and Dane show. Anthony, loyalty over money, baby. I'm sorry, I have to evict you, Kira.
Kira, that means you have been evicted from the Big Brother Canada house. Please say your goodbyes.
What the hell, Dane?
You wouldn't take me.
Why did you lie?
You lied to me too.
So I am officially recording.
Sweet.
And okay. And Ken's just going to take some photos.
Perfect.
Interview.
I actually don't like to be photographed. No, I'm kidding. I've just been on TV for 69 days, so.
And feel free to speak your mind. It's an all-language show.
Okay.
So if you want to say whatever, feel free.
Oh, I will.
Okay. Kira.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good considering all things.
I think in the finale when Dane essentially cut you.
Yeah.
I think you gave him the hand when you were leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hug you, that sort of thing. How are you feeling today about what happened at the finale?
You know, all things aside, Dane played a great game. For me, what shocked me and bothered me so much was, you know, 5 minutes before that final competition, he looked at me and he said, "Don't worry, you're winning at least 20 grand today."
Really?
And so, you know, there was no use in lying to me at that point. So I believed him. Because why? Like, why would it benefit him? So I really did believe him. And so I was shocked and very disappointed that he would, like, build me up just to tear me down.
Right.
And that's definitely why I kind of gave him the hand and didn't want to hug him. I was just a little bit bitter and resentful. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I love Dane. He's a brother to me. Mm-hmm. And I respect him a lot. I respect his game. You know, we weren't necessarily for each other in the game. I wanted him out, he wanted me out, but
he put you up, what, five times? Four times?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, he put me up four times.
So why do you think he would do that in regards to, like you were just saying in the last competition, say, "I got you"?
I think he was just trying to cover his base in case I won.
Okay.
He felt like I would probably bring Anthony, but just in case. He wanted to cover his base and make me feel good with him in case I wanted to change my mind last minute.
Okay.
So I get it. Don't respect it, but I get it.
Let's talk about your HOH.
Yeah.
Your HOH.
I had one.
You did.
Yeah.
You originally put up Adam, you put up Dane.
Yes.
Great move.
Thank you.
And you wanted to get one of those out originally.
Yeah.
Walk us through the process of why you ended up putting up Mark and then getting out Mark.
Yeah.
Was that because of Anthony?
No. So originally putting up Adam and Dane was a very hard decision for me just because, you know, I did end up becoming very close to Adam. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he would feel very betrayed. But I knew it was the smarter game decision. I wanted to take a big shot and break them up because I knew moving forward I couldn't go against two of the strongest competitors. Mm-hmm. But then after I nominated them, seeing Adam's blow up and having him kind of talk about the pretty boys in this like cultish like pride, it became very clear to me very quickly that Adam would rather take the pretty boys and have less of a chance of winning than take me further. So I knew for a fact after Adam's blow up, he would cut me and bring the pretty boys because he was so like proud of what he did. It was his baby. While I knew Dane was looking at the game in, you know, a more selfish way maybe. And I knew that Dane saw it beneficial to keeping me. And so when I offered him the chance to stay and take out Adam, it was because I knew for a fact Mark, Anthony, and I would not have beaten Adam in mm-hmm. a physical competition. Mm-hmm. There would be no hope. Mm-hmm. And Anthony was playing very well, planting seeds that Mark was saying my name and everything. But regardless of that, if that was true or not, I still would have felt like we needed Dane to take Adam out. And, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes making the smarter decision is making the bigger decision and the bigger move. And I think that was really hard for me. I had to put my pride aside because for me, this whole season, I was working towards taking out Dane. Mm-hmm. He was my arch nemesis, mm-hmm. and I really wanted to take Dane mm-hmm. out. But I knew if Dane left, I would be the next one to go. So I needed him to stay and beat Adam. And look at what the comps were the following week. Adam would have won both of them, and I would not have been in the final three. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee it. So I made the right move. Maybe I should have put up Anthony instead of Mark, but, you know, his form of manipulation with like the whole mentorship was very effective.
How much of the show, are you a fan of the show?
I'm a huge fan.
Of Big Brother Canada?
Yeah, Big Brother Canada. And I've seen seasons of Big Brother US, but more when I was younger, like less recently. Mm-hmm. Well, except I saw the most recent one. Mm-hmm. But yes, both Big Brothers. I'm a huge fan. I love this game.
Did you have, when you found out you were coming into the house, did you have a formal strategy going into the house?
So I wanted to play weak and be underestimated. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to hide the fact that I'm an emotional person. So I knew I had to use my weaknesses as strengths and instead of fighting them. And I also know that I have a very easy time like emotionally connecting to people and bonding with people. So I knew whoever I bonded with would be the people I would look out for no matter what. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you saw, like, I fought for Sam and I fought for Chelsea best I could. But at the end of the day, our communication was not as strong as, you know, the pretty boys had a very strong alliance where they were communicating in a very intelligent way. And unfortunately, you have very little control in the house. And as much as I wanted them to like wake up and work together, they saw me as a liability because I was a target so early on. So it was hard to get them to want to work with me in an effective way. But hey, I made it to the final three and they didn't. Yeah. So I was doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You are gender non-binary.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. How does that play out?
Yeah. So, you know, growing up, I very much felt like an alien and thought that there was something very, very wrong with me. And it was really hard when you look in the mirror and you don't know what you see. And it's confusing. And I thought for a long time that meant that I had to transition to be a boy, but I didn't feel like a boy either. And, you know, there's zero representation, especially when I was a teenager, of like gender fluid or non-binary or like genderqueer people. And so to have no role models to look at was very difficult for me. And I remember when I watched Ellen growing up and she would always wear button downs. And I was like, oh my God, I can wear button downs. And that was like changed everything. And then I cut my hair. And it was only when I was living in San Francisco, I had a friend who was a trans man and was very involved in the poetry scene there. And he knew before I really knew that I was non-binary. And I was fighting it because I was confused and everything, but he kind of got me to write a poem about what being a woman meant to me. And it was through writing that poem did I realize I wasn't a woman. And after I came out to him and read him that poem, literally later that night, like we went to a poetry event and they called my name. He'd signed me up. So I went from coming out to one person to coming out to like 200 people.
Wow.
And their validation, I had an applause, I had tears in my eyes, was everything I needed to come out to the world. Yeah. And to have this platform now to talk about it and to have such a diverse cast be so good with the pronouns, for me, is life-changing.
Was that a motivating factor for you to be on Big Brother Canada to get your message across?
Yes, 100%. A huge part of why I auditioned was to use this platform to speak my truth and share my story and to spread awareness for, you know, the queer family that I come from. And, you know, I think everybody hopes to make a difference. And there's sometimes you feel like you have no control and like you can't change anything. But I saw this as an opportunity to make a real difference, and I had to take it. And I'm beyond honored and blessed to have had this opportunity to, you know, share my truth and use my voice. And it's not over. I plan to keep being an advocate for as long as I can.
Well said.
Thank
well
you.
Said. Kara, well said.
Thank
well,
you.
Well done. And honestly, well played.
Thank you.
Be
Thank
proud
you
of yourself.
So much. I am. It was a hard feat to go against the Pretty Boys. They dominated.
They did.
But I am proud.
Yeah.
Anthony, do you have any regrets?
Not one. I am the puppet master. I controlled every single vote, whether I was HOH or not.
Did you lie in this game?
We're going to start. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you scared?
I'm a little bit, man. I'm a little bit. I'm ready. I'm ready.
I have to say it's a pleasure to be here with you, Anthony.
Thank you. You as well.
First of all, runner-up. Thoughts?
You know, I'm very blessed to be runner-up. Dane played an incredible game. He had a great social game. He was one of the greatest comp beasts ever. And ultimately, I told Dane he played the better game. You know, I tried hard in some of the comps, but man, I can't keep up with some of these super fans. They've been watching this show for 20 years. They know the ins and outs. They know everything about this show. And Dane ultimately won that game, and he deserved to take it home.
20 years in the making for
20
him.
Years in the making.
Crazy.
Yep.
Here's an interesting what if.
Yep.
Had you kept Adam and Adam. Taken out Kira,
yep.
What do you think would have happened?
If I had kept Adam and taken out Kira, I knew 1,000% that if Adam won any of the next HOHs, which he had a very good chance of doing, that there is no chance he was taking me. Adam said numerous times, you are the greatest manipulator. You played the best game. You're playing the best game in this house. Mm-hmm. And I knew he truly meant that. He told me when Adam told me he, you know, he had a final two with Dane, and they had this final two for a long time because they were having discussions saying that if they were in the final with me, there's no way that they could take me down. So, you know, with Adam telling me that over the past couple weeks, I knew that, you know, it was going to come down to hopefully Dane. And at the end of the day, I don't think Dane would have wanted to face me in the final over Adam. Adam, you know, played a horrible social game, but he was just so strong and so well protected that nobody could touch him. So, you know, I don't think I would have stood a chance in a final three with Adam and Dane.
Right. The The final score, 7-0. Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. I was a little surprised, actually, that I didn't get a couple votes. Mm-hmm. I felt that I did play an extremely strong social game. In mm-hmm. fact, I think I played the best social game in the house. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this comes down to what the jury thinks.
Yeah.
This is not, you know, so much of, you know, what's actually going on, because a lot of the members of the jury had no idea what was really going on. They had no idea about the Pretty Boys Alliance. Mm-hmm. They had no idea who was making the final decisions. So, you know, Dane was extremely personable. And, you know, you got to think of who went in the jury house first, who set the tone for the jury house, who, you know, started saying things, because there's also a game to play in the jury house, you know. And I think that Dane, you know, played an excellent game in the house. And the people that were supporting him, you know, definitely weren't too happy with me. But, you know, like I said, they only know the game from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for most of them, it wasn't reality.
I don't know what to call it, but you definitely have a gift of talking with people, coaching them, inspiring them, mentoring them.
Yep.
How did you develop that? Is that something that just comes naturally to you?
You know, I went through a very dark time at the beginning of 2018. It was very difficult for me to get up off of the floor. I kind of had to talk to myself. I kind of had to tell myself, you know, there was a point in time I wasn't happy with myself. I wasn't happy with the decisions I was making. I wasn't happy. You know, I had to basically look at my life and take full, I had to take full responsibility for me bringing myself there. Mm-hmm. So instead of putting blame on other people, I had to take full accountability for the things that I had done to get myself there. So, you know, I did a lot of talking to myself. I did a lot of talking to God. You know, I've always been a team player. I played on sports my entire life. Mm-hmm. So I definitely know how to get teams involved. But the person that you see and the person that you heard is who I am. I do believe in people, and, you know, I hate it when people say that they don't believe in themselves. You always have to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, nobody else is going to believe in yourself. You have to believe that you can win. You have to believe that you can fight. And at the end of the day, you are your longest commitment. So stay committed to yourself. Keep your head in the game and your head forward, because you got this.
You found out you were going into the Big Brother Canada house.
Yes.
Did you have a strategy going into the house originally?
Yes. I didn't know much about the competitions. I didn't know much about, you know, having to remember days and stuff like that. But I did know that this was a social experiment. And I did know that at the end of the day, in order to do well in this game, you're going to have people like you. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely had a past where, you know, people have, you know, not been so nice to me. I learned over the past couple years how to hear the things that people are not saying. I know how to understand even when I don't. You know, I've seen people go through things. I'm 31 years old now. You know, I've been through relationships. I've been through friendships. You know, I've been through people who have had serious struggles in their life. So I come from a place of substance. So, you know, it really helped me going into the house to be able to share information and relate to people and feel like they could relate to me. And that ultimately is the reason why I went so far.
The Pretty Boys Alliance, was that something that just happened naturally? Was that something that you were looking to do?
I was asked, you know, what is your strategy going into the game? Are you going to gravitate, you know, more towards men? Are you going to gravitate towards women? And I said, honestly, I have no idea. I don't know who you're going to put into the house. I'm going to gravitate towards the people that I relate to. You know, an offer was brought to me on the table. I was already thinking about the people who I right off the bat related to. I wasn't thinking I wanted to just go up against, you know, another big target. I knew I was going to be a big target. I'm 6'4", 300 pounds. Like, walking into that house is all eyes on me. So. Yeah. You know, I wanted to definitely align and build relationships with strong players that I could relate to. And right off the bat, I had a strong relationship with Dane and a strong relationship with Adam. And me and Mark grew together. Me, you know, I'm very, you know, a different person than Mark. But, man, I love that guy. And I learned a lot from him as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the Pretty Boys would eventually come together one way or another.
And that happened for you day one?
Yeah, this was day one.
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
Best part about being part of Big Brother Canada Season 7?
The best part for me was really testing my mind. You know, there were times where I had to make very quick decisions where I had to act very fast. I had to be patient, and everything had to be calculated. Mm-hmm. I had to fight urges when I wanted to lose my mind, you know, when I wanted to, you know, really scream at people, when I wanted to tell people, you know, you're doing this wrong and get angry. For the most part, I learned to stay calm, especially inside of that house. But I also learned to have faith. I prayed every single night. I prayed every single morning. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in God. And I think that, you know, my faith and my prayers is the main reason why I got as far as I possibly did. But definitely, you know, remaining calm and fighting my mind and was one of my best strengths in the game.
Wow. Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. Well done and well played, Anthony.
Thanks
for your time.
Thank you very much.
We're just moments away from finding out who will win $100,000 cash, a $25,000 home furnishing makeover from Leon's, $10,000 worth of groceries from Summer Fresh, and an unforgettable trip for two anywhere in the world with Contiki Holidays. So let's do it. Dane and Anthony. It's time to reveal our winner. As you know, that winner has been determined by 7 jury votes. One at a time, I'll let you know who the voter was and who they voted for. If you hear your name, that's a good thing. And I'll do the math for you here. You need 4 votes to win. Good luck to you both. Samantha has voted for Dane. Corey has voted for Dane. Okay. Stefania has voted for Dane. One more for Dane, and he's our champion. Damien has voted for Dane. Congratulations, Dane! You have won season 7 of Big Brother Canada. You can both now finally make your way out of the house.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
I'm good. You're $100,000 more wonderful.
Yeah. It's hard to sink in right now, but it's a dream come true.
I was wondering before coming into the room to interview you, Dane, toothless Dane, teeth in.
Yeah.
But you were saying that without the tooth,
yeah,
that's more you.
Absolutely. I'm the fun, outgoing, goofy guy. And I mean, when my teeth are in, I try to be really respectful, but that's not who I am. I am respectful, but I'm Dane with no teeth is the real Dane.
Yeah. Yeah. And you say your mom gets mad at you?
Yeah, my mom really kind of breaks her heart when she sees me smile with no teeth. But she understands. She loves me for who I am.
So you are the winner of Big Brother Canada Season 7.
Yeah.
20 years in the making.
20 years in the making.
20 years in the making.
Yeah.
You visualized, you've materialized. Has it sunk in, you think?
No, I don't know when it will sink in. I don't know if it ever will sink in. But like I said, I've been watching the show for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Every time I watch it, I say, I could do that. I'd be so good in the house. And then when this opportunity came to me, I didn't want to blow it. And I really studied the game. And when my opportunity arose, I wanted to make my dream turn into reality. And never did I ever think I was going to win the season, but here I am.
You just said you never thought you would win. Did you actually think that? Or deep down inside, I can do this?
Yeah, I mean, deep down inside, you know, I was born a winner. I played hockey all my life. And you know, you got to flirt with the line on cockiness and confidence. Okay. And I'm very confident in myself. So, you know, everyone asked me if I started playing the game day one. I started playing this game months before I entered the house. I really studied the game. I really visioned myself winning Final Two. And when I came into the house, it was a different atmosphere. You know, I'm usually that loud, outgoing, bold character. And when you get in that house, there's a lot of characters in that house. So, you know, I just really used my experience and my knowledge of the game to get me where I was.
Mm-hmm. You ended up taking Anthony for your Final Two.
Yes.
Rather than Kira.
Right.
Were you more loyal to Anthony? And did you honestly think that you would beat him at the end, as opposed to taking Kira, who might have been an easier win?
Right. Bringing Kira would have been the easy road, I think. But like this season, nothing was given to me. Everything was earned. And I wanted to earn the title of Big Brother Canada Season 7 winner. Mm-hmm. Me and Anthony made a pact day two, and I wasn't going to go against it. Everyone found out about the Pretty Boys, but no one found out about the Doug and Dane show. And I wanted to stay loyal to him as much as possible. Bringing him to Final Two was very scary. You know, he's a very good talker. He's very good at convincing people and persuading people. However, at that point, I really did figure that I played the best overall game. And when I brought him, yes, it was scary. I could have gave my opportunity up for winning the show. But, you know, our saying was loyalty over money. And I really proved that loyalty does exist.
And you stuck to that.
I stuck to it.
Did you have a strategy going into the house, and did you actually stick to that strategy?
Yeah, I mean, watching past seasons, I knew a four-person to a five-person alliance was absolutely crucial, and that happened 10 minutes into the game with the Pretty Boys. I wouldn't be sitting here without those guys. Those guys did a lot for me, and what we did was absolutely beautiful. It was the greatest love story ever written, in my opinion. I think we were one of the most dominant alliances. And then other than that, I just wanted to be very social. I'm a very social guy. I'm a fun-loving guy. And I use that West Coast charm on people to really trust me. It did break my heart to go against some people's words. However, I knew this was a game, and what I needed to do to get to the Final Two is exactly what I did.
We saw you cry some crocodile tears at times.
Yeah.
So the question is, when you were actually letting Adam know that you were going to let him go, were those tears, were those genuine for you?
Those were very genuine. Adam was he's my brother. He'll be your brother for the rest of my life. He did so much for me in the game. Like I said, I wouldn't be sitting here without his help in the game. However, I knew there would come a point where to get to the Final Two with Adam in the game still would be very tough. And if I were sitting beside him in Final Two, I'm not sure how the jury would vote. So yeah. It came a point in time where I needed to do what I had to do to him. It broke my heart. Those are very genuine. I took his dream away. But he's a fan of the game, and he respected my game move. In my opinion, that was the biggest move of Season 7.
I think it was maybe in the first half hour of the game that you guys went into the house. Was it Adam and yourself in the pantry?
Yep.
That's when you guys decided, was it just going to be a two-person duo, or were you planning four guys at that point?
We were never planning four guys, but we were planning four people. Okay. And me and Adam are fanboys of the show. We've watched so many seasons, and we knew that a four-person alliance to a five-person alliance would do very well. And you know, we were sitting in the kitchen after me and Adam talked about the alliance, and Mark and Anthony so happened to be sitting beside us. Mm-hmm. And the whole house was like, you guys look like a boy band. And right when they said that, we kind of looked at each other and was like, okay, let's do this. I'd never thought in a million years that we would do as well as we did. We were in power for most of the game. And like I said, I think the Pretty Boys made their statement, and our legacy will live on for a very long time.
And the name The Pretty Boys.
Yeah.
Did Adam come up with that name?
No, that was Anthony. You know, he is a diva, and we had some names floating around, but you know, the Pretty Boys was a nice ring to it, and you know, we looked around and we were all pretty pretty. So Anthony came up with the name, and we stuck to it. And like I said, I'm so grateful for those guys.
You had your mom in the house.
Oh yeah.
What was that like for you,
man? It was surreal. I started watching this show with her. Mm-hmm. My parents divorced at a young age, and I had my dad for, you know, sports and hockey. Mm-hmm. And I needed to connect with my mom somehow. And, you know, when I was 8 years old, I had three times a week where we got to connect with Big Brother. So to see her in the house was a dream come true for me. It was my mom's dream to be in the house. And for me to get her into the house and share that one moment, I'll never forget it.
You recently lost your dad to suicide.
Yes.
What do you think your dad would think of you now being a champion of Big Brother?
Oh, man, I know he's proud of me, but I wish he was in the crowd watching what I did this year. But like I said, he had the best seat in the house. He was above. He helped me through this whole season. He had some laughs. He had some tears. But he was definitely with me with all the comp wins. And he was definitely helping me with the final HOH and with the jury votes. Like I said, it was a tough experience to go through what I did with him. Mm-hmm. However, I felt his presence the whole way, and I dedicated this whole season to him.
Well said, Dane. Yeah. Well said, well done, and well played. Congrats.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And welcome back. That marks the end of my Big Brother Canada 7 coverage. Hopefully, I'll be back in 2020 with Big Brother Canada Season 8. A big thank you to Hamster Watch for helping me getting the word out with all my coverage for Season 7, as well as IBB Insider and all of you listening, liking, retweeting, much respect. So, recently, I was asked to attend and cover the 10th annual University of the West Indies Toronto Benefit Gala. I originally did an interview with the main patron, Dr. Donette Chin Lao Chang. You can find that interview under the archives banner at marktara.com. Today, we'll hear from the honorees, including multi-platinum recording artist, Deborah Cox, as well as multi-Grammy award-winning reggae artist, Damian Marley, son of the legendary music icon himself, Bob Marley. That up next.
Hi, this is Carol Pope on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Mindset.
I am here with Joy Spence, Appleton Estates Master Blender. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Mark. And how are you?
I am well. You look great.
Thank you.
You're wearing a fantastic outfit and a great corsage.
Thanks.
Fantastic, fantastic. You are the first woman master blender in the spirits industry. I'm interested to know, what does that mean to you, being the first of, being a pioneer, basically?
Actually, it is an awesome feeling. I was actually quite shocked that in 1997, when I became the master blender, that there were no other female master blenders in the entire spirit industry. And it's quite an achievement for a Caribbean woman to have accomplished this.
Crazy.
It is.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in Manchester, Jamaica. So okay. Born in Jamaica.
I was born in Port of Spain, Trinidad.
Oh, good.
So, but came here when I was really little.
When you're young.
Yeah.
Good.
How did you get into blending, becoming a master blender? How did that happen for you?
It was actually a sheer accident. I joined the company as a chief chemist, mm-hmm. and I was given the mandate to modernize the chemical laboratory. Then I started to work with the previous master blender and recognized that there was a whole new world out there where I could apply my sensory skills to actually making rum. Mm. And so I tutored with him for 17 years, and during that period he taught me all I needed to know about blending rum, how the different styles of rums could be combined to create these beautiful flavors that we have in the Appleton Estate range, and that I could use my sensory analysis to be able to differentiate these aromas. And so it took me out of the mundane testing in the laboratory every day to a whole new scientific application and somewhere where I could apply my creativity and my passion. And this is where I am today.
Fantastic. I understand that there's a 20th anniversary special blend that you made. Is that accurate?
No, I did the Appleton Estate Joy anniversary blend, which is a 25-year-old rum.
Yeah.
And I celebrated that to celebrate not only my 20 years as master blender, but my 38 years in the industry.
38 years.
38 years.
You are being honored for the University of the West Indies. What does that mean to you?
Well, as an alumni, I feel very elated and special to be awarded the Vice Chancellor Award tonight. I have actually received in the past the Honorary Doctors of Law from the university also. So my university is very special to me, and it's very special to be here in Toronto at the Ritz to celebrate this particular event, in particular the fact that it's a fundraiser for scholarships for students who are not as fortunate as others.
Yeah, yeah. Joy Spence, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And enjoy your evening.
Surely will. Okay.
So I am here with Justice Gregory Regis. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm well. You look very handsome with your tuxedo, black tie, all that sort of stuff.
Well,
as well
you.
As Mrs. Regis, Justice Regis as well. Who are you wearing?
She's wearing me.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm just joking.
You look great, Mrs. Regis. You look fantastic. You have a varied career, a journalist, CBC, CBC Radio. In 1999, you were appointed a judge of the Ontario Court of Justice. I'm interested to know, with that whole experience, what was the most challenging part for you being a judge and being a man of color? Talk to me about that.
Okay. Well, as you know, in our society, the issue of color and race is a very present thing. So,
especially when it comes to the justice system.
Yes. So when I became a judge in 99, one of the obvious things was how few of us there were in as judges in Ontario. So that was an issue, and part of what I tried to do and I still continue to do is to increase the numbers, you know, and I do that in a number of ways. I encourage young lawyers to apply to become judges. I think it's important to do that. I encourage the society to the active and ensuring that the people who make the decisions about who become judges, step up to the plate and do their duty and mm-hmm. make sure that the bench represents the society mm-hmm. in that way. So, mm-hmm. but you ask, what were the challenges? Well, the obvious challenge is that there is a sector of society that is questioning when someone like myself becomes a judge. You know, mm-hmm. I heard comments like, tokenism, it was just affirmative action, you didn't deserve to be there, things like that. So I guess I had to overcome that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the work itself, was the normal. I'd been a lawyer for a while, I knew what I was doing, but the challenges were really around the what I call the detractors of people of color and so-called visible minorities mm-hmm. When they get into positions like this.
Is it a challenge to get people of color to step up to become lawyers, judges, that sort of thing?
I think it still is. Partly, there's a cultural thing. I think a lot of people of color and so-called visible minorities do not see themselves in those roles.
Right.
For lack of the role models and so on. So I think we still have that problem, at least in the black community. It seems we still do have some of those problems, yes.
You were the executive director of the Jane Finch Legal Aid Clinic.
That's correct.
For about, 4 years?
Four years, yes.
Did that period of time give you any insight as to how you would end up becoming a judge and how you would basically oversee things by having that background behind you?
Oh, certainly. And it's not just that those 4 years. I mean, my whole background, I come from a small village in St. Lucia where, there were not a lot of opportunities. And so from the time I was a child, I was in a situation of volunteering and assisting. My mother was the primary factor in that regard. Mm-hmm. She always encouraged us to help and in any way we can. So it's cumulative. So mm-hmm. it's that kind of background, working in the Jane Finch area, because part of my job in Jane Finch was just not lawyering. It involved going out in the community
mentoring
and doing outreach and mentoring and so on. So as a judge, one brings all one's experiences into the job. And I think that has helped me a lot, yes.
You're being honored today by the University of the West Indies.
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
Oh, it's one of those things that often one cannot describe. I've always prided myself on being a Caribbean person. And when the premier educational institution in the Caribbean honors one, it's a big deal.
Wow!
It's perhaps one of the greatest honors. You know the old story that a prophet is never recognized in their own home. You know, well, this is the opposite. So this honor coming from a Caribbean institution is really, really profound, and I'm deeply honored.
Well, Justice Gregory Regis, Mrs. Regis, thanks for your time. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yes.
And congratulations.
Thanks again.
Mr. Marley, you are being honored today by the University of the West Indies. What does that mean to you?
It's a big deal. University of the West Indies is the highest level of education that you can really get in Jamaica or in the Caribbean, so to speak. I used to go there as a kid for extra lessons when I was in high school. So it's full circle. I'm emotionally attached to the University of the West Indies, you know? So it's a big deal for me.
In 2005, you got a Grammy and you made history by being the first reggae artist to win a Grammy Award outside of the reggae category.
Right.
How does that make you feel, knowing that
I'm very proud of that. I'm very, very proud of that. I think that's one of my greatest achievements in terms of an award given to me. And I think For me, I've added to the legacy of reggae music. You know what I mean? I've helped to build a bridge that needed building, and I've been a part of that. So that's what it is for me.
And in 2018, you won the Grammy for Best Reggae Record, yeah. Reggae Album.
Yeah.
Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you.
Irie, respect.
So I am here with Dr. Julia Daniel, professor and cancer biologist at McMaster University. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You look great, lady in blue.
Thank you.
So is that blue or is that like cobalt?
I would guess it's cobalt.
Okay.
And then I'm wearing accessories made by my friend, actually custom made for the dress.
Wow.
By my friend, Carolyn Bruce.
Okay, Carolyn Bruce.
Tweak Boutique, yes.
Tweak?
Yep, Tweak Boutique.
Tweak Boutique. Is that here in Toronto?
It's online. It's all online.
Okay.
So she can custom make your jewelry to any outfit that you want.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you are a professor at McMaster University. You're also a cancer biologist.
Yes.
How did you get into this line of work, being a cancer biologist?
Yeah. So I was always fascinated by the human body and the natural world. So I always wanted to pursue a career in research. And I always wanted to do something that would give back to society and the community at large in the African diaspora. And I guess the cancer angle came about because my mom died from ovarian cancer just at the end of my undergraduate career. And a few months before her, actually, my next door neighbor in Barbados also succumbed to breast cancer. So those two things happening at the end of my fourth year of university at Queen's University pretty much propelled me into cancer research. Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah, it was an interesting year, summer to say the least. Yeah.
So let's talk some scenarios.
Okay. Scenario one.
Well, there's just one scenario.
Okay.
Research.
Okay.
Cell-to-cell adhesion.
Adhesion. Yeah.
Discovery of a new gene, naming the gene after your love of calypso music.
Yes.
Kaiso. Talk to me about this gene that you discovered. Yeah. First of all, what does this gene do?
Okay, so we'll start back with the cell adhesion. So after my PhD, I moved to the U.S. to work at St. Jude Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I joined the lab of Dr. Albert Reynolds, who was studying cell-to-cell adhesion. The reason I chose his lab was because cell-to-cell adhesion is the one cellular process that is a major contributor to the metastasis or the spread of tumors from their primary site. So I always felt that if we could understand what made the tumor break away from the primary site and move to vital organs such as the lung or liver, we could perhaps at least prevent the spread to those vital organs and prolong the lifespan of patients diagnosed with cancer. So that's why I went to his lab to study cell adhesion. And in the process of that was when I discovered and cloned the gene that he allowed me to name. And so I decided I wanted to name it Kaiso, something that would have a definite Caribbean link to it.
Okay.
Because there are very few blacks in research. And I just wanted to make sure that there was a little stamp of Caribbean or African diaspora culture in the scientific field. So that's how I named it Kaiso. And I listened to Kaiso music every single night when I was cloning the gene. So that was my tribute to those late nights in the lab.
I want to backtrack a second. You just said there aren't a lot of people of color, basically, in research. Why do you think that is?
I am not sure. I have lots of theories, and we don't have enough time to go into all of them. But I think some of it is not seeing other scientists that look like yourself, right? But coming from Barbados, I saw, you know, obviously black lawyers, doctors, dentists. So for me, it was never something that I even thought about until I became a scientist and realized there weren't many of us.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Whereas, so I know for a lot of the students that I teach, that's the first thing they say. A lot of the students at McMaster will tell me that I'm the first black professor or teacher they have had in their entire life.
Wow.
Like they just have never had one.
Yeah.
And so I think that could be one factor, not having or seeing other black researchers or knowing that that's a career that they could pursue.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're being honored today by the University of the West Indies. What does that mean to you?
Oh, well, first of all, when I received the email, it was quite a shock. I didn't even know I had been nominated for the award. Mm-hmm. So it was, first of all, a shock. And then it was quite humbling. And obviously, I felt incredibly honored that I was selected because there are many other folks from the Caribbean that are doing amazing things in Canada and around the world. And so I felt like it was a great recognition of the work we're trying to do, especially the breast cancer research that's focused on triple negative breast cancer that disproportionately affects Black women. So I felt that was a really, for me, it was reassuring that folks were aware of what we were doing and what we were trying to do. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Dr. Julia Daniel, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So I am here with Howard Brown, a scholarship recipient. How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
So first of all, where are you originally from?
I'm from Jamaica, the rural parts of Jamaica. So I'm from a place they call Clarendon, the parish is Clarendon, and I live in Maypen.
In Jamaica?
In Jamaica.
Okay. I was born in the Caribbean as well. Oh. I was born in Trinidad.
Oh, yeah. I've been to Trinidad before. Yeah, man. Trini.
That would be me. So you are a scholarship recipient. Talk to me about that. You basically, you applied?
Yes, I did.
And how long does it take?
So the thing is, the important part of this story is that I saw the scholarship for a couple of years, about 3 years I saw it, but there are some criteria that you'd have to meet in order to apply for the scholarship. Okay. So for maybe about 3 years, I've been preparing, ensuring that I was volunteering, ensuring that my GPA was at the standard that was required. But when I saw it, for that time, back 3 years ago, I knew that I wasn't ready because, one, I was doing my associate degree and I had to be doing a bachelor's degree, completed my bachelor's degree. So when I saw it, I stepped out by faith and I just applied for it because I knew that I needed the help because I was really struggling with covering my tuition. And so just applying for it, I knew that if I got the scholarship, then I would be able to reach my goal in completing my studies with Huey.
So in Jamaica, that's one of the campuses.
Yes. So the University of the West Indies has four campuses.
Okay.
The open campus, which I'm a part of, is located in 17 Caribbean countries. So it really caters to tertiary education for 17 Caribbean countries. And it is located in Clarendon, well, in Maypen, my parish that I live in. So the thing is, the open campus offers to persons that are not able to go on campus because it's expensive to go on campus and live, the tuition fee. So it gives you an option to work and study. So I took on that challenge because I wasn't able to go on campus because I couldn't go on campus full time, stay on all. It would have been difficult for me finance-wise. So I made the decision to apply for a job and work part-time and attend school.
So how long is the curriculum there? Is it 4 years?
Yes, it is 4 years. But because it's part-time, sometimes you have persons staying a longer time than 4 years. But for me, per se, I actually stayed in the time frame. Until.
And what were you studying?
Well, I'm completing a bachelor degree in social work.
Okay. And so you applied. And how long was that wait between applying and actually finding out?
So I applied in, I believe, June, because currently, coincidentally, as we're here speaking, the email was sent to students a couple of days ago that the scholarship is available for next year.
Okay.
So students are currently applying for that. So when I found out, when I applied in May, I believe, because I was a little late on the application because I was still kind of contemplating if I should apply for it. So I applied in May, and it was maybe about August when I found out thereabout.
Okay.
August when I found out. And they had some other criteria. For example, interviews would have called you. There are some other little stuff that you had to do. So it was a little waiting time. But I was hopeful, really. And then when I got the email that I was awarded, I was through the roof because, man, I knew that this would have helped me to complete my final year because if it wasn't for this scholarship, I knew I'm scheduled to graduate in October, but I know that if it wasn't for the scholarship, then chances are I'd be there for another 2 years or so because I had to be moving slow because it was difficult to finance it. So it is just awesome.
So the scholarships that you receive, it helps to pay.
Yes.
It doesn't cover the whole thing.
It covers, for example, for me, for my final year, it covered the tuition for my entire final year.
Okay.
So I didn't have to worry about tuition fee for the academic year.
Right. Wow. So how do you feel? So how long ago was this that you applied for?
Last year. last year.
So you're now starting out, basically.
No, I'm actually the gala is because now they're preparing for the new academic year. Mm-hmm. So the gala, what they'll do is prepare for students coming in, mm-hmm. in September. So this gala will go towards those students, mm-hmm. for the next academic year. Mm-hmm. So we'd have already covered those in academic year 2018-2019.
Okay, but you said you're in school for 4 years.
Yes, I so it's more than 4 years because I did my associate degree, mm-hmm. and then after completing my associate degree, I started the bachelor's degree.
Okay,
so it's a little bit more than 4 years that I was studying.
And you finish in October.
In October 2019.
And how do you feel about that?
Oh my God. I don't know if you could feel my heart and feel the excitement, mm-hmm. just knowing that I'm completing it, because one of the things is in Jamaica, it's a very small percentage of persons who actually get to pursue tertiary education. Mm-hmm. And even in the region, it's a small percentage of our young people that gets the chance, because it is seen as something that is only available to wealthy persons, to rich people. So to just know that I've been given this opportunity to change my life, and not only that, but the lives of others around me, it's a tremendous feeling.
So when you do graduate, you're looking to get into social work?
Yes, I am. Okay. Yes, I am. So, but I want to focus on youth development.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that I'll be able to make some contribution to policymaking within the Ministry of Youth back in Jamaica.
So you're going to stay in Jamaica?
Yes. Well, I
because right now you're in Toronto, Canada.
Yeah. So anything is possible. I've never limited myself, mm-hmm. and I've never boxed myself into to one option as to what I need to do. Mm-hmm. As opportunities come forward, then I'm open to taking them. But some way or the other, I definitely want to make some contribution to my country, because it is vital that we have persons to impact our younger generation in the way that I've been impacted by some people.
You want to give back?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Howard Brown, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
I am here with Mohammed Faqih, owner of Paramount Fine Foods. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm well. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Yay! That's because you helped me earlier.
Yeah, it's okay.
You look very stylish in your black tie and your yellow rose.
Thank you.
2006, you purchased a nearly bankrupt restaurant, and it's now the fastest growing Middle Eastern food chain in Canada with over 60 restaurants. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
But I'm interested to know, why did you make that first purchase in 2006? What made you buy that restaurant in the first place?
Well, it's a great story because my wife sent me to buy keto baklava, which is a Middle Eastern dessert.
Baklava. Yes. Love it. Yes.
And I walked in and the gentleman told me his story, the gentleman that owned the bakery, where he was running out of money, and if he was to shut down, him and his staff would have to go back home because their visa was based on the business. Mm. So he asked me if I would lend him money. So I said to him, I don't know you. I'm just here for baklava. So I handed him my card, and I said, call me. But you know, one of those things that you didn't expect to happen, and you're asking yourself, why did it happen? Yeah. You know, there should be some good reason for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm driving afterwards, and I said, but isn't that my story? I came here with $1,300 in my pocket in 1999, and people helped me. People stood by me. And a lot of Canadians made my story where I am and made me who I am today by helping me, by giving me opportunities. And I thought that was a call to action. I walked in for baklava, and this man didn't know me, and talking to me about his story, then he asked me if I would help him. So I called the man back and I said I was ready to help him. And I did try to help him out, yet Revenue Canada and CRA were faster than him being able to turn around the business. Mm. So he said, no, I want to go to Dubai. They froze my account, this, that. So I lost my money, basically. And then I went back and I put the team together, all the staff, and I said, instead of going back home, why don't we try to turn this around and make it the best Middle Eastern restaurant? And we did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. You walked in for baklava and you left with a restaurant.
Yes.
Crazy. 2017, You used your restaurant to help provide about 100 jobs for Syrian refugees. Talk to me about that.
150 jobs. I was driving downtown, and I heard on the radio station people were complaining about the Syrian refugees, that they're going to become a liability instead of becoming an asset.
Right.
And so I called into the radio station and I said, well, if you consider me an asset, I'm an asset with 2,000 employees. I've been paying taxes for the last 20 years. These people are like me, and I think we should stand beside them. They have great skills. They only need an opportunity. They don't need a handout. They need a hand up. And I did a call out to all the business people listening to the radio if they will help me hiring refugees. And this is where I actually committed me and all our franchisee and the Paramount team to hire 150 Syrian refugees. And today we still have them within the company. And they were great people, great asset, and they had diversified our team and brought great ideas, and they brought great skills. Because when you come to a country, and I came hungry, I came with $1,300, lived in a basement apartment. When you come to a country and you're so dissatisfied and you want to start a new life, you're so hungry, you want to prove yourself, you want to prove your skills, so you do great work, and you become a competition to other people that they're not doing it. So they brought a great culture to our company. And above and beyond, I got even involved with Tent Foundation in the U.S., and we made sure that other companies, not only Paramount, we put out a big dinner, couple events, and we made sure, like, Starbucks committed to hire some refugees, and IKEA did. So it's all about the work you do, and it's all about never forget where you came from. Because a lot of people, when they do well and they become lucky or well off in life, they forget where they came from. They want to cancel the past. And the past is the main thing in your life, where you came from and remembering how much people helped you. And it's your time now. It's your duty to help other people and give back.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I think actually hiring the refugee wasn't something that I was giving back. I think it's the profitable thing to do. It's not only the right thing to do, because they have brought a great culture, great experiences and skill sets to our business. And it made our executive very proud to be part of a company that supports other people that they need help, right? Yeah. Today, companies looking for purpose. And companies with purpose attract talents and attract loyal clientele. So like UWI, great cause. This is purpose, right? This is a university with purpose, with great causes, right? And that's what people look for today. Today is not a fight of money. It's not who has the best army. It's about who has the best talent. And if you want a great talent in your country, if you want a great talent in your company, you need to have a great culture and a great purpose.
My family and I immigrated to Canada in 1975. I'm interested to know, why did you move to Canada in the first place?
They told me they were so friendly. Canadians are so friendly.
Okay.
And they always talk about the weather. So I said, no, that's great. I'm coming.
Okay.
No, I came here. A friend of mine was here. And I studied in Italy. I had my master's degree in Italy. And when I came to visit, I found Canadian very, very inclusive, very open, great hearts, very pleasant people. And comparing to Europe, Canada was less racist and accepting. So I thought this is a great place where I could plan something for long term, and people will only judge me for my skills instead of judging me for where I am, my color of the color of my skins, or my religion. And you know, at the time when I arrived with a guy named Mohammed with heavy accent, I had a lot of things against me.
And right? here you are today. In 2017, the Quebec City mosque shooting, you paid for all six funerals of the people that passed. Why?
Because I really want to send a message of love to everyone. Canadian were scared. All Canadian. You're Muslim Canadian, you're scared. You're non-Muslim Canadian, you're scared. You're brown like me. Your blonde and blue eyes, everyone was scared. What's going to happen next? And I thought sending a message of love will bring us all together. And at the same time, I always believe that we all do things for two reasons. To impress and make proud our parents, and to leave a great legacy behind for our children to be proud of. And I walked into the house, and my son Imad was scared. And I said to him, what can we do about it? And we start thinking, and I got them to be part of the solution. And we pledged the money. And we wanted to do it secretly. But yet everyone called me and said, but we need much more than that. We should take it to public and let other people help as well. So we can gather much more money for those families that they were in need and devastated that time. So we did. And the response was amazing. Everyone jumped on board, working together as Canadian, right, to resolve one community issue. And it was an amazing gesture. People keep repeating it, and it's a great sign of love, of coming together as Canadian. I think we have a great opportunity to Canada, in Canada, to show the rest of the world how people from different backgrounds, different religions, different colors, different sexes can come together and can put this mosaic, beautiful mosaic, and become a beacon of hope for the rest of the world. Yeah.
Today you're being honored by the University of the West Indies. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. University of West Indies and all the causes and the education and fighting poverty, what's known for, all these causes that they're very well known for. And for them to acknowledge what I've done in front of my children, that's why I brought them with me. It's a great honor. It's not only a yellow rose. It's for me, it's a badge of honor on me because, you know, all what you do, again, people ask if I want to ever run for politics. That's why I do certain things. People say, what do you want out of this? I want a good legacy, right? I always say, if you want to know, if you're doing the right thing in life, write your own eulogy and then read it and let someone else write your eulogy and then compare it. And if they're not matching, change your life because that means what you wrote about yourself and what others are seeing you doing is different. And, you know, I take a pride that we did not only build a good company. We build a community while we're building a company.
Wow.
And that's very important for me.
That's powerful.
Thank you.
Well said. Mohamed Faki?
Yes.
Yes.
That's it. You can't get it wrong anymore.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. And thank you very much for the honor.
Goodness, this is so so quick, crazy. Deborah Cox, how are you?
Yes, I'm great. I'm great. I'm thrilled. I'm here amongst my people, and I'm home, and I'm receiving the Luminary Award tonight, and it's just, it's overwhelming. It's like full circle, you know?
You look amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, so back in the early 90s, the Diamond Club.
Oh my God.
Opening with Traces of Sound.
Yes.
You were one of two, I think, lead singers?
Yes. Yes.
I was there.
No way.
I was. To see Liberty Silver because you guys were opening for Liberty Silver.
Right, right. Good times.
Crazy.
Wow.
So here's the deal. 2019 Deborah Cox, going back to early 90s Deborah Cox, what would you say to that early version of you?
What would I say? Continue to be fearless. Continue to believe in yourself. Trust that little voice inside. Keep dreaming.
Hold on for a crazy ride?
Yeah, hold on for a crazy ride. Keep dreaming. It's never impossible until it's done. That's one of my favorite Nelson Mandela quotes. Because it's true. It's true. It's until you take a chance on yourself and believe in yourself and just go for it. that you end up in places like this.
You have a lot of gay fans.
Yes.
Crazy gay fans. What would you say to them? Because I have a gay radio show.
Yes.
What would you say to your crazy, amazing gay fans?
Well, that I love them and that I see them and I love that they have managed to just live in their truth and their authenticity. And that's what I love the most about my LGBTQ community, is that they live, like truly live, and don't let anything stop them.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Deborah Cox.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And welcome back. That was my coverage of the 10th Annual University of the West Indies Toronto Benefit Gala. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So, get Rainbow Country wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, from HGTV, Tommy Smythe, and Artscape Gala, Creative TO 2019. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.